Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we. And welcome to Habs Unfiltered. I'm your host, Blaine Putney, and I'm joined by a very special guest this week, Mike Fink of the Hockey Writers, who covers the Islanders and Bridgeport. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's been a busy week, I guess, right?
It has. My week hasn't been as busy as yours. You've been traveling around, following Bridgeport, covering the AHL.
Yes, my first year covering Bridgeport, fourth year covering the Islanders, but been covering Bridgeport in person this season. It hasn't been so good for them, but still plenty of exciting stuff going on. The AHL season's picking up. The NHL season also, they kind of go hand in hand, and we're only a few more games till the All-Star break, it looks like, so. Powering through, I guess, in the hockey world.
Well, a bad day in hockey is a good day for anything else, really. I mean,
yeah.
Watching hockey is not a bad job to have.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've thought about it last year because during the playoffs, I call it, like, sleep deprivation month, or sleep deprivation period, where it's, like, the first round and the second round especially. And in all the podcasts, you hear the same sort of theme where it's like, everyone's like, oh, I'm exhausted. I know, don't know what day it is. But I'm like, thinking in my head, like, you wouldn't trade this for anything. Like, this sort of feeling, like, it's always a pleasure. Always, like, especially once the playoffs come around and it's like all the game and it's like the best quality hockey. And it's always a blast. So, like, we're kind of in the dog days of the season where it's like the All-Star break's a few days away. And then, like, you kind of get into a different sort of stretch, but still, like, never a dull moment, I think.
I'm looking forward to the AHL All-Star game for Montreal. They're gonna have Logan Mailloux there from the Laval Rocket, so I'm gonna be interested to see how he fares in the skills competition and the game itself, just to kind of gauge his development thus far.
It looks like, I mean, it looks like Laval's got, I mean, it was kind of like almost the backhanded compliment saying that they had a good farm system because all the players were called up, but the reason they were called up because the roster wasn't so good. It was one of those like backhanded compliments, but it looks like Montreal, I mean, that's an interesting thing because I think Montreal's building something promising. When you look at like the number of young players that are coming up and are promising, look good early.
Yeah, and that brings me to basically why we're on the show today. It's kind of a look back at the game last night where Montreal had some young players, but more so they celebrated a former great with Patrick Roy's return as the coach of the New York Islanders. So I thought it was an amazing tribute that they gave him during the national anthem, and he looked rather emotional afterwards. What did you take from that moment?
Yeah, I mean, Montreal does some of the best tributes. I mean, you look at like how they appreciate, I mean, some of the greats, and I mean, understandably, I think Patrick Roy really is a unique star for a unique era because you think about him, he was part of the, I mean, he's really one of the, I mean, you talk about the greats from the previous eras in the 50s, the 70s and all that, but he's really one of the, like, possibly the greatest from like the 90s. And that's really the last time. So they gave him that. I mean, it was a great tribute. And I think Patrick Roy said he didn't want it to be about him and he didn't want it to be about himself. He wanted it to be about like team and obviously, but like once they started the tribute, it was like he couldn't hold back, and it was clear, like, okay, like, take it in. It's kind of interesting because I would I would think like one of the things he could have done is used this as like a way to motivate the team, where it's like, hey guys, like they're gonna do a tribute for me. Like everyone knows me that I'm coming back. It's a big deal. Like let's put a statement out. Let's have a statement for tonight. I mean, you know for sure Montreal like said like, hey, nothing would make us happier than to, I mean, probably Marty St. Louis said like before the game to the guys, like, listen, they're gonna have this tribute for Patrick Waugh. It's gonna be his night. Let's make sure. Let's ruin his the night for him almost in a way. And so like they're he wanted he didn't want to make it about himself, but I mean, I think some good coaches actually like know how to play into some of the moments. And so like, but it was great. But yeah, the beginning of the game, I mean, that during the way the fans applauded, gave him that ovation, that was great to see. It was like you kind of knew it was gonna happen, and like it did. It was nice. It was a nice touch, honestly.
Now, he's only been there a couple of games, and I cover the QMJHL as well, and I spoke to him at length throughout the finals, and I saw how he managed his bench in Quebec. But how do you see him managing in New York? Is it well, on Long Island, is it similar in that he's kind of a general on the bench and he's dictating to the players what he wants to see, or does it still seem like he's feeling things out?
I mean, it's gonna take a while until he really has a good until his system's in place, until like everything's really in place. I mean, the Islanders don't want to be too patient. I mean, they don't want to say like, oh, it's gonna take him a year to figure stuff out, to take a full training camp, because the expectations are to make a to contend, and that's why they brought him in now and didn't wait until the off season. I in terms of like what you're starting to see small differences, I think, or you're starting to see like how they look on the ice. I think a good way of describing it is they looked very loose under Lane Lambert, and now you see a tighter game, and you just see it's like it's more they obviously, I mean, they make some mistakes still, some errors once in a while. They're the big thing though is they're playing with more of like they're playing with more discipline. They're trying to play with more focus, and I mean that's one of the things Patrick Waugh is trying to bring. He's also trying to, I think, bring. I mean, there was the thing that Lambert was a little subdued or a little laid back on the bench, where he didn't like wear his heart on his sleeve. And if Patrick Waugh, any coach is going to do that, it's going to be Patrick Waugh. You are seeing that. Yeah, so I mean, you are starting to see small differences. I mean, we're still waiting for, I guess, a good game to see. Like, we're still waiting a few games in to see like what it's really going to look like. But I think one of the things is you're kind of seeing the Islanders want to get back to a more defensive structured game. They want to play more disciplined, and I mean, you're sort of seeing that, not fully, but they are getting back to that a bit. And I mean, we'll see how long we'll see how long how the what the effect is, because I mean, you almost feel like the honeymoon's starting to end a bit after losing to Montreal.
Yeah.
That was like that that's
It
the kind
did
of game. Sorry, go ahead.
it did seem like the post game talk from the Long Island press, at least from that side of it, it did seem like they're kind of exacerbated. They're tired, or they're I know the Islanders are only about what, 4 points out of a wild card spot, and that's really the goal, is to push for a playoff spot. So that seems to be the pressure behind him. And that's kind of what we saw through the game. But despite that poor start, maybe because Montreal was emotional and picking off the energy from the fans, I did see a coach turn a team around and basically take over the game from that point on.
Yeah, I mean the really the Vegas game and Montreal game were similar in the sense that after the first period, or after a slow start, they made the game closer. They lost by one to Vegas, and they lost by one to Montreal. And there is a little bit of if you want to give Patrick Waugh the benefit of the doubt, you could say that Aiden Hill had a great game in net, and really, I mean, it was his first game back, but he looked like he didn't miss a beat in terms of just blanking Islanders. Islanders were getting pressure, and I mean, Sam Montembeault had a great game. I think he had like close to 40 saves, maybe even more. And I mean, the Islanders made it close in the end. So I mean, if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, one of the things you could say is that they face these two goaltenders, and you are waiting for that game where the Islanders possibly put up 4 or 5, and they have a good offensive performance. But I mean, and the first those two games, you haven't seen it because goaltending was there. So I mean, I guess you really want to see what happens after the All-Star break. They play one more against the Panthers, and then it's the All-Star break. But after the All-Star break, I guess really you'll get to see what this team really looks like under Patrick Waugh. I think more so.
Well, I mean that game, the game against the Canadians, it the Islanders by far deserved to win that game. They had about what I'm looking at Natural Stat Trick now. They had almost 70% control of that game. They had puck possession almost 70% of that game, and if not for a couple of minor breakdowns early in the game, they might have just walked away with a regulation win.
Yeah, I mean that's been the story of the season to an extent. It's like this is the turnovers, the late like sloppy play, the penalties, the when they take penalties, it ends up costing them. That was some of the issues under Lambert that I think ultimately got him fired, because when you look at what some of the things, if you take a step back and look at like what are some of the good things to check off when a team is well coached. You say, oh, they're good at forechecking. They play two-way hockey, and they play well in all three zones. And one of the other things is they don't take a lot of penalties. And if they do take penalties, it doesn't cost them. They have a good penalty kill. And under Lambert, they had none of that. It was just they were you could say they were very a poorly coached team. And with Patrick Waugh, it's not that they look more disciplined, but those mistakes are still coming back to bite them. Like as the kids call, what do they call it? A pizza when you pass it to the blue, you try to get an
Up the
outlet
middle,
pass and you just turn it over. Yeah, like you've seen Noah Dobson have a few of those, or you see some of the defensemen have a few of them, and those plays cost them, and I mean, it's been the story of the season. You want to see if that's something that they'll improve under Patrick Waugh. I think if there's anything one of the things that he'll add, I think, is a more controlled transition game, where it's like they'll be able to move the puck more effectively out of the defensive zone. But I mean, so you're hoping to see that effect sooner than later, I guess.
And in watching the game, you see the major corner pieces of the franchise, like Noah Dobson, who played over half the game, Matthew Barzal, Bo Horvat, Brock Nelson, Kyle Palmieri. They all brought it in that game. I mean, Dobson, like I said, played over half the game, and he had a 3-point night. Except for that pizza up the middle, I thought he played a dominant game. It was almost impossible to beat him.
Yeah, I mean he's really, I mean he's coming to his own on the offensive end. But I mean, you just mentioned those 4 or 5 players, and one of the things that's interesting about the Islanders this season, I think, is it's not a top heavy roster, but you look at where the offense is coming from. It's Barzal, Bo Horvat, Brock Nelson. It's like your big three, and then Dobson from the point. And then there's kind of a big drop off from a scoring. I mean, you have good four. You have good defensive forwards in your on your third line, your fourth line. I mean, Cizikas is out, and that's kind of a big loss in terms of just overall production from the fourth line. But I mean, you look at you. They're not a top heavy roster because they have the depth, but like it start you, you that is some of their issues. It's just like is is the especially the scoring production drops off after those guys. And I think the other thing really to think about is just this defensive unit is just not look the same this year. And it, I mean, at first people were thinking it was a Lambert issue because they played more of a loose style, aggressive style, with the defenseman like joining the rushes. And that, so you were thinking, oh, okay, this is more of Lambert's coaching style. But I mean, there Scott Mayfield hasn't looked the same this year. And I think you're starting to see age catch up to him. Adam Pellick has been on and off. I mean, now he's hurt again, so that's kind of a different story. Pollock hasn't been in the lineup. The defensive unit has not looked the same, and it's kind of something that they've been able to rely on in the past few years, especially under Barry Trotz. And now it just it's outside of Dobson, Romanov's hit or miss kind of the way he plays. So it's like he's really good. He's one of their best defensemen, but like you sometimes see it, and he's still learning the game. So it's like he'll try to take out a skater on the rush, and if he misses, if he hits him, it's a turnover. If he misses, it's a 2-on-1, or an easy chance for the other team. So that's one of the other things you're realizing with this team is it. I mean, but as you said earlier, I think, which is interesting, is that they're a few points away from being back in it. If they get on a winning streak all of a sudden, they're in a slump right now. So like you're like, okay, just take the hits. But if they get on a 3-game winning streak or whatever, or they get win 7 of 10, then all of a sudden you're looking at them and they're like back in the mix in the Metro, basically, which has
Now
been
you
the
talk
story this
you,
season.
yeah exactly and you're bringing up a point that I wanted to kind of touch on. Now obviously I wanted to talk about Romanov, but I'll get to him in a minute. I'm with only 4 points between the Islanders and a playoff spot. Are they going to be aggressive buyers? Are they going to be buyers at all, or are they just kind of going to stick with what they got?
I mean, I yes, and this is like it's hard to answer this because I think if Lamoriello will do something to almost like put it's like putting the defibrillator on the team. He did it last year. The Islanders were looked dead in the not dead in the water, but they were like in they were struggling in January. It was like this almost a repeat of last season where they were struggling, and then they make the big move and get Bo Horvat. And you wonder if the spark though this season was getting Patrick Waugh. That was the thing that was like, okay, this is like the brings like this team needs a jolt. You bring in a head coach who's gonna definitely provide that. And if that's the move that you make, I mean they could I would keep an eye out for maybe them making the move. They in terms of like some of the needs they need versatility. That was something that actually also got Lambert fired, where it was one of the other issues under Lambert is that you just have too many one-trick ponies and too many people who do like one specific thing, and you need versatility, especially in the playoffs. They might add. The question is obviously what can they give up to make another move? I mean, the credit card is starting to build the debt's building up in the sense like you've given up first round picks. You're gonna do if you do it again, then you don't have another first round pick. The farm system isn't great. You have individual players you could flip. I mean, Dufour is kind of a player that people like to monitor, but he's the top prospect in your system. You have some prospects maybe. Like last year they gave up their top prospect for Bo Horvat and Aturatu. So you could say like, okay, maybe they'll do something. The other question is if they continue to struggle, if they sell. I don't see it either, because like Lamorel does not rebuild, and that's not something like even though they do have an intriguing path to it, because but I mean I would so to answer the question, I think it's possible they can make a move. It doesn't seem one like they have enough pieces to make the right type of deal. And two, it doesn't seem like that's the thing they're going to do this year. It seems like the move was getting Patrick Waugh. That was the spark. And then maybe maybe a minor move. Like last year, Pierre Engvall was the extra piece that they got at the trade deadline. Maybe a type of player, like a middle six player that you could see them making a move for. But I mean, I don't know if they have the pieces for like if anyone wants Lindholm or Jake Gensel. I don't think they have the pieces for that.
Yeah, it I do think it'll be pretty tough considering they're fairly maxed out. I mean, they do have their first this year, next year. They have their second this year, next year. But that is mortgaging a future that for something that may not lead to more than a one round win. So you guys aren't the Leafs. You're not your goal is not just one playoff round. So I can see why they wouldn't want to buy, but when you have players like Noah Dobson and now I mean Romanov, yeah, he's learning, but he I mean he's a possession machine for your team. I can see him making one more move. I don't think it's going to be a massive move, but I don't know, maybe something a little under the radar for a little bit more scoring depth.
Yeah, I mean, the other interesting thing is Lonnarello already, it was almost like putting the duct tape on the defense where the injuries piled up and he did get Robert Bortuzzo. He acquired him for like a late round draft pick from the Blues, and he picked up Mike Riley off waivers. And Bortuzzo's out now, so it doesn't really like it doesn't help that he didn't help the cause that he's injured. You could see maybe another, he'll try to make another move for a two-way defenseman. That could be a piece to monitor. But like, I mean, I think that probably makes the most sense just because if we want to use Bo Horvat as a template, the price for an elite player at the deadline is at least a first round pick, at least a top prospect. And an NHL ready young player, like someone in their 20s, in their early 20s, like 23, 24, or even younger, who can make an impact immediately on a rebuilding team or a team that wants to rebuild. So, I mean, the Islanders have those pieces, but then you're basically depleting your farm system or you're depleting everything else more. And you don't know, you don't want to like, you don't want to put yourself more into that debt. Almost.
Yeah, and now with Pelech out injured again with yet another concussion, there's going to be some pressure on the call-ups at this point. You know, guys like I don't know, Travis Mitchell, sorry, might get a call-up. So they're going to have some difficulties adjusting. Again, Noah Dobson is basically playing the top and second pair, so that'll help. But with Pelech out, I think that'll hurt a bit. And that kind of brings me to the next point that I wanted to cover on the show, and that's the hit that took him out. Now, oddly enough, on social media, normally when something like that happens, you got two sides. You know, team A, team B, they both disagree because they're backing their guy. But what I saw last night after that hit was basically everybody all at the same time, yep, he deserves to be kicked out and he deserves a suspension. Now, I felt terrible for Pelech. I thought, you know, he had just come back, he was starting to play well, and he's hurt again.
And I mean,
Gallagher deserved the five.
especially like to add, Pelech last
Yeah.
season against the Blues, he hit his head against the boards and missed at least 6 weeks because of a concussion there. So especially for Pelech to be hurt, it's like almost like with a concussion history, it's like it especially hurts with that.
It did seem targeted. I mean, you normally don't see that from Gallagher. I'm not going to defend the hit, but I'm going to say that I've never seen him do something like that before. That's not his style. He's a grimy, greasy player in the crease, but he's never been a headhunter, and that did look intentional. So I felt okay with the 5 games. I don't know what do you see from the Islander side of it?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting you mentioned that because I don't think Gallagher has a history of hits, and that was part of the reason he got five and not more, because he didn't have a reputation. And I think Gallagher is, or his hit, or not this hit particularly, but like when a player like him gets fined or suspended, and people start coming out saying, "Oh, what a dirty player." I think there's a fine line between a player that plays chippy, who plays like, who is especially someone who is a forechecker or a hard hitter, a fine line between someone who's a hard hitter and a someone who's like a grind it out type of a fourth liner and a dirty player. And then every team has those. I mean, you don't, oh, you almost, you don't can, you don't win the cup without like fourth liners who can grind it out and deliver some hard hits. So, but I mean, there's a fine line between that and a dirty player who has multiple hits. I don't know Gallagher's reputation as well as obviously you would, but it doesn't seem like he has that reputation, and it doesn't seem like he has it. I mean, he doesn't have a track record. That's why it was only five. I think the big thing that really people are going to be upset about, and understandably, is that these are the type of plays that the NHL is trying to get out of the game. The you just can't, you can't, like, especially when you're taking your elbow and you're sticking it out towards the skater, like it almost feels more of a malicious thing, where the league is trying to get rid of this, where you're especially like just skating up the ice. Like, I know, like a lot of old co coaching cliches is you got to keep your head up while skating up the ice, but like there you just in the in today's game, like you can't, you just can't, you can't do that. And that's where the five games, I think five is about right. One of the things I would ask, I was gonna ask you, this is something I thought about before coming on, is do you think this was more or less dirty than Mark Scheifele's hit on Jake Evans? If you remember the hit
Oh,
when.
yeah.
So that's a good, I mean, this is interesting. I don't know what, I mean, it's probably subjective, because that was obviously a different context and a different situation. But do you think that what Brandon Gallagher did was more or less dirty than what Scheifele did to Jake Evans with the empty net, where he just took him out, basically?
I do think that it was less dirty because you could argue at least that with the Gallagher, the Pellick hit with Gallagher, it was a spur of the moment to try and just get a piece of the guy, and he made the wrong decision. But with the Scheifele hit, he had 200 feet to know what he was going to do, because he came from the other end of the rink to make that hit. So that was premeditation the entire way. So that's where I see it was a little bit, it was a lot more dirty. Not that I'm defending Gallagher's hit at all, but I do feel like the premeditation is the difference.
So I mean, the reason I Scheifele, I think, got four games for his, and
In
I
the
mean, this
playoffs.
is a, taking a step back is kind of every time a hit like this happens, the team that gets hit is like calling for the prosecution of the player, basically like 40 game suspension, like, and that, I mean, of course you want to say that, but if using Scheifele as a template, where it was, I think, four games, I mean, four games in the playoffs, I think it was, so it was a little different than but even so, like, if you want to use that as a template, and I think one of the things that I think about is that that was, in terms of context, also Brendan Gallagher, this is in the middle of a tight game, it was very close, and it was one of those games that, if you want to include context, where it was a tight game that they were still in it, and I mean they had the lead, obviously. I mean they almost didn't because of the penalty, and the Scheifele goal, it was like an empty net, and it was like over, and Scheifele kind of wanted to send the message of like, don't run up the score, but like he wanted to do it by like hitting him. So I think what, the reason I say that is because almost every team, there's every few, every not every few years, but every year there's, or even every few months, there's always a hit that you immediately in the moment you want to say like, oh yeah, this guy should be suspended like 10 games, 20 games, or whatever. And the league has, I mean, if you want to use this template, like they have like they have like five games is a good metric, or if you want to say five regular season games versus playoff games, I think that is a you see you don't you very rarely see the league, especially on someone who for the first time who doesn't have this reputation, to come down hard like that. I mean, I know they want to get this out of the game, so it would be interesting to see. It wouldn't surprise me if they would have given him more. But with that in mind, I think just every there are these there are hits where it's like you're like, oh, in the moment you're like, oh yeah, that guy should get it. Especially when it's your team, you want your guy, you almost want justice to be served in a way. But I mean, the league almost has that precedent, I think.
And that's a question I wanted to bring to you. You see these plays that get that got the suspensions and the numbers they got, but you see plays identical to the one that Gallagher's made, and they don't get anywhere near this type of punishment. Even people that have that track record. So is this finally the NHL saying, okay, here's the line, this is what it's going to be. You do something like that, you're getting five. Or is this just another case of random justice, spin the wheel, and this is what you get?
I would lean more towards they, I mean, just because I think they do want to get this out of the game where they want to. So, I mean, if they wanted to really set a precedent, I mean, if they really wanted to, then if they wanted to get this out of the game, they would have come down harder, obviously. I mean, really want to get it out of the game. It's kind of like the same way if they wanted to get fighting out of the game. Where if there was if you started fighting, they would start handing out suspensions and fines and longer penalties for it. But they, I think, so I think they want to kind of enforce this more. But well, what's the name? I don't think though
Paros?
it's more what.
Paros?
It's what?
The Paros, the safe, NHL safe, player safety. Is that who you're talking about?
Oh. Because yeah, I mean, I think like one of the things, I mean, the reason I mean, that was kind of the thing with that, with like the Shifley thing, because I think like there's almost like, I mean, there is like there four games is almost, I mean, five games also, it's like with these types of hits where it's like you were they I think they want to st start saying like, hey, like we want to start getting these out of the game. I think this is kind of their starting, almost the starting point where it's like, I mean, you, where.
I'm gonna be interested to see if that is the case because I every year, like you mentioned, there's a play like this that gets a suspension of some kind, and every year they always say, okay, this we don't want this anymore, but then the next time it happens, it's a justice by different means. You understand?
Well, I mean, I do hear that like there's sometimes someone gets like a two game suspension and you're like, or no suspension at all. With that, I was th when with this one, when you think about it in a vacuum, where you think like, because I mean, I think because I think they probably after like if they wanted to when they reviewed it, especially with the way the hit was, they probably wanted to give more. But then they with the review, I think because Gallagher doesn't have this history also, they moved it back to they moved it to five, where I think it almost like it was an evening out. There is a lot of randomness sometimes. I mean, especially with players like with a reoccurring history, Tom Wilson is the one that comes to mind, where it's like he'll have multiple hits, and then I mean, not to single out Tom Wilson, but he's a player that come like, where it's like all of a sudden, like randomly, he'll like have something, and people are like, oh, he's for sure getting suspended, and then it's only two games or one game. So I mean, I think there is a little bit of inconsistency when it comes to that. I mean, maybe part of that also is because they do look at every case in. They do look at every case individually, and they don't look at it in the sense of like they don't they're not looking at some plays, some of these hits or some of these dirty plays as like, how can we get rid of this from the game, as much as like, how do we punish a player who let's say didn't do it, who didn't do it. I mean, a classic example of a penalty, whereas like a skater comes crashing into the goalie and like knocks the goalie out of the game, and that's a common, and that's almost like a common hockey move where you're just skating on the rush. You can't, and it's hard to just navigate your way out of the out of navigate out of the way. I mean, if it happens to your team, you're calling for the player to be suspended. But so I mean, but like when those plays happen, it's like they're I mean they want to get rid of that. But you also want to look at the player individually and say like, okay, like what well, like if they don't have this rep if they don't have this reputation, then we don't it's kind of this balancing act in a way where it's like we don't want to punish the player more than we don't want to make him I mean, we don't want to make that player the victim of like of a greater cause. I mean, that would be like Brendan Gallagher. Do you think it would be fair to have Brendan Gallagher like suspended just because the message is we want to get this out of the game almost? And
Now, Mike, we're running out of time. I have to, like, the clock's running. I'm terribly sorry for cutting you off. We're going into something really, really good, but the window's closing. So can you just let my fans know where they can find you?
So I'm on the Hockey Writers, Mike Fink. I write about the Islanders, both Bridgeport and NHL. Once in a while, I write general NHL stuff. So that I'm there. You could find me there. I'm on Twitter. I think Fink's underscore thoughts. I also got Threads under the same name in case Twitter collapses for some reason. Which also means I got Instagram because in order to get Threads, you had to get Instagram. I don't use it well. What's the name? Those are basically the things you could find me on. Hopefully trying to produce more NHL and AHL content as the season progresses. That's basically that.
And with that, Mike, I really, really thank you very much for coming on the show, especially coming in on short notice like you did. And you brought some really good outside perspective to the Canadians and what happened in the last couple of days. And a little bit of talk about Patrick Roy, who, let's be honest, every Montreal Canadiens fan loves to talk about. So again, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing with us. I encourage everyone to go check out Mike's work over at the Hockey Writers. And for my listeners, I want to thank you guys all for listening. Thank you for checking in with us and sharing with us. I really appreciate that. My co-hosts Matt and Treg both appreciate that as well. They were unfortunately unable to join us today, but they will be back eventually real soon. And finally, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, if you're talking about it, so are we.
I'm Matt Cundall, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent, almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jag and Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Cundall from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.